From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Coming up later in today's show, we're going to hear from two members of the Wisconsin State Assembly, Democrat Jill Billings from La Crosse, who represents the 95th Assembly District, and Republican Lauren Oldenburg from Viroqua, who represents the 96th. And we'll talk to them after we speak to Derek Van Orden, who was elected to represent Wisconsin's 3rd District in the United States House of Representatives. We recorded this conversation in the middle of last week, the week after Christmas, with full anticipation that by this time he would in fact be Congressman Derek Van Orden. And as you know, that has not taken place yet because the House is still embroiled in a battle, even as we speak, over who will lead the U.S. House of Representatives as Speaker. And until that happens, new members can't be sworn in, business can't be done, committee assignments can't be made. And so Derek Van Orden is still Congressman-elect. Nevertheless, we talked to Derek about his hopes for this year's congressional session. So as of when we're talking this conversation, you haven't been sworn in yet. We're talking the week after Christmas, but you've been in Washington for a bit of time getting ready to assume office officially. What's that experience been like for you in your initial time that you got to spend in the Capitol?
It's been pretty interesting, actually. They call it new member orientation. I nicknamed it Congress Camp, and I don't know if you track me on social media. But
yeah, I saw that.
You did? Okay. So I'm trying to demystify this process. And what it is really kind of, you know, how do you do your job? 101, Congress 101. And it would be very daunting if I had not stood up a couple SEAL teams from the ground up and built a business from the ground up. It would be daunting because you have to hire employees. You have to set up your infrastructure, your communications channels, all the sort of stuff that, you know, I've done previously, is what they're teaching folks that haven't done it. And then there's stuff like, how does the appropriation process actually work? And then you sit in conference with your fellow Republicans, or me with my fellow Republicans, and you start doing stuff. Like, we voted on our rules package, and that's how you're going to comport yourself in Congress. But the demystification part is what I think is very important. That's why I've been going around taking pictures of, here's the dry cleaning shop. Here is where you can have lunch at the cafeteria. Here's the endless supply of hot sauce, which is real and awesome. Here's a little tram you can take in the tunnels, because people get elected to office and they kind of disappear. And I want to bring everybody in the 3rd District with me on this journey from DC. As a matter of fact, as of today, after this interview, we're getting in the car and we're driving our truck to Washington, DC. And I will document that as we go, because I want people to be along with us the whole way.
Okay. And so you've been home for the holidays and now heading back to sort of get it kicked off officially.
That's correct.
All right.
So we're going to pack up in the car, or the truck rather, and we're going to drive out. It should take a couple days. And then January 3rd, we get sworn in collectively as a group on the floor, which should be interesting. And then we go to work, man. And we have a lot of challenges ahead of us right now, and I'm going to face them head on.
So I want to ask you about some of those challenges during the campaign. Obviously, you know, a lot of issues get touched on because a lot of people are concerned that their issue is going to be important to you. But as you actually begin your term, things that you can start taking action on right away, what are those legislative priorities that you expect to push for right away?
So the first thing we're going to vote on is the Speaker of the House, and then we're going to vote to defund the 87,000 IRS agents. And the reason being is they're going to start tracking people down to $600 annually for electronic transfers. The Biden administration said that they're getting these IRS agents on board to make sure that billionaires are paying their fair share of taxes, but billionaires do not have Etsy stores. Billionaires are not selling stuff on Facebook Marketplace, and everybody listening to this does that sort of stuff. And I think it's a gross overreach of our government. I don't want the United States government tracking every single American citizen's transactions down to $600 annually. I think it's completely inappropriate. And so that's going to go out the window. Last month, we had 233,740, I think, apprehensions in the border last month, including 73,000 gotaways. That's what the Border Patrol calls the folks that they are assuming got into the country. And to put that into perspective for you, Ezra, that's larger by a few thousand people than the largest city in the 3rd Congressional District. That was just last month. So we have to work on securing our borders. So those are two big things. defund the IRS package, get the border secure. And primarily my concern about that is we've had over 100,000 American citizens die of fentanyl overdose. We know for 100% certainty that those precursor chemicals or the manufactured fentanyl is coming from China. It's going through Mexico. 90% of the fentanyl that is killing our children, our brothers and sisters and husbands and wives, and everybody listening to this right now knows somebody that has either died from fentanyl overdose or knows or is related to somebody that has. Everybody listening to this. So 90% of that comes across the southern border. And again, we had 233,000 plus folks come be apprehended last month alone with over 73,000 gotaways. So we have to work on this collectively. That is not a Republican issue or a Democrat issue or an independent or a libertarian issue. That is an American citizen issue. And there's something else I want to tell you. I fully recognize that 48% of this district did not vote for me. They didn't. And I plan on representing them as well as I do the 52% that did. And on that note, it's either going to be in January or February, we're working out the actual dates. We're holding a summit for all of the elected officials, really from the county board up. That's for Democrats and Republicans for the entire third district. So I mean what I say. I plan on working with everybody, regardless of the letter after their name, to make sure that this is a better district. And so we're inviting every single elected official, Democrat and Republican, you know, the nonpartisan offices for county boards, that's everybody knows they're partisan. We're going to invite everybody because I don't care. I want everyone to see, I'm going to fly my entire staff from Washington, D.C. here. And I want everybody to be able to look at the person who's going to be able to help solve their problems from a federal level. And they'll have their personal phone number. They're going to know their name and their email address. And it goes for Brad Path too, who I ran against. You know, he's my state senator and he's a Democrat, but I'm his federal representative. And we have to put aside these things. We have to vertically integrate our government so that we can actually help everybody, regardless of their political affiliation.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because this is not the first context in which you've mentioned, you know, the 48% of people who didn't vote for you. So looking at that from a legislative perspective, I know there's really strong disagreement. Like there's sometimes fundamental worldview differences between liberals and conservatives or the left and the right or however you want to characterize that. But from a legislative point of view, do you see any possibility for common ground?
We just talked about, I think, the best example we possibly could, the rampant fentanyl overdoses. Fentanyl does not care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. It will kill you dead. In April, our awesome police officers in La Crosse interdicted 3 pounds of fentanyl. That's enough to kill 680,000 people. That was in La Crosse, Wisconsin. No one cares if you're a Democrat or Republican. They don't care if you shop at Quick Trip or Casey's or, you know, Piggly Wiggly or Wegmans. They don't care about any of that stuff. That fentanyl, it's across the board. It's poison and it's killing our citizens. If we can't find common ground on that, I don't know how we can find common ground. I mean, because that's a pretty big thing. And again, we know exactly where the fentanyl's coming from, the precursor chemicals, and we know it's how it's getting into the United States of America. We can work on that together. Absolutely. The healthcare issue, Republicans shy away from healthcare. I don't. Guess what? I'm a 100% service-connected disabled veteran. I get all of my healthcare through the VA. If we can't find common ground that veterans should have healthcare, come on. We have so many issues with the rural stuff. Before we got on the air here, we were talking about rural broadband. That's why it took me a few minutes to get on this call, you know, because I live in a small town. Well, guess what? I've been advocating very, very hard to get on the agriculture committee because rural development is the purview of the agriculture committee. And that's where I plan on working. If they're going to get me on there, G.T. Thompson is going to be the chairman of the committee. I want to be on the ag committee to make sure that we can help people.
People think ag committee and they're thinking farms, and rightly so. But also, as you mentioned, there's that rural broadband. There's SNAP benefits, which in Wisconsin is known as food share. That funding comes from the agriculture, from the farm bill, which is overseen by the agriculture committee as well. So that'd be an important assignment if you can get it.
100%, man. Listen, I was raised in abject rural poverty, single mom, broken home. You know, I know what it's like to go for want from being a kid. You know, I dropped out of high school when I was 16 years old. I joined the Navy at 18. I served for 26 years. I did 5 combat tours as a SEAL. You know, one of the things that we can also find common ground now is this. You know, my story can only be told in the United States of America. And I know this because I've lived on 5 continents. I've lived and worked on 5 continents, man. And so think of this in perspective. I think it's awesome. Within a single generation, I'm going from abject rural poverty, broken home, high school dropout, to the highest levels of power in the most powerful country in the entire world, the United States Congress, in a single generation. That only happens here. And this is going to throw your listeners for a loop. Who do I share that in common with? Anybody? Barack Obama. Barack Obama came from a broken home, single mom, and then within a single generation, he was the president of the United States. So clearly, I don't agree with the vast majority of things that President Obama did, but I agree with him on this. That's the American dream, man. And that's real. And that's something else we got to celebrate. And that's not a Democrat issue, a Republican or independent. You know, clearly Barack Obama's a Democrat. Well, I'm a Republican. And that's common ground, dude. I can find common ground with just about anybody. There's 4 conditions, Ezra.
Okay.
Everything we talk about has to be legally, ethically, and morally correct. And you have to be willing to put the betterment of the country, the district, or your state above your own personal, political, or financial wants. If you meet those 4 conditions, I'll work with you.
It's the morally and ethically where I think people have discussions about what does that mean in each context. And one of the issues I wanted to ask you about kind of falls into that category and is a real huge partisan issue for both Democrats and Republicans. And that's the overturn of Roe, which happened in the Supreme Court in 2022. And what I'm wondering is, now that that's been struck down and the abortion issue has been placed back in the states, is that, are you comfortable leaving that in the hands of each state, or are you pushing for some sort of change in federal law, a restriction of some kind or something like that nationally?
No. And you know what? That's another thing they made up about me in the Democrat Party and the press. And they just ran with it. They said that I want a federal ban on abortion. I don't. I don't. I've never said that. I've been on record now for over 3 years saying that I would have written legislation that had exemptions for incest, rape, and the health of the mother. Said that 3 years ago, man. I've been on record for 3 years saying that. I do not want the federal government involved in this stuff. And we need to have exceptions for these things. And for me, you know, I'm an evangelical Christian. I go to a Baptist church, and it is a deeply personal thing to me. But I also understand that we're governing, and that's what we have to do. We have to govern people. And I don't want to live in a theocracy. Theocracies don't work. I give you Iran, Afghanistan, you know, they don't work when you're forming public policy. That's just a fact. And for me personally and morally, it's a huge issue. But I also understand that I'm going to govern from the House of Representatives, not from my Baptist church, although I take those values with me.
It's interesting to talk about, because I think a lot of people, the 48% that you mentioned who didn't vote for you, I think they might wonder how, you know, your involvement in your religious tradition, and we all have that or don't to one degree or another, but like how that informs you as a person so specifically and so thoroughly. How do you go to Washington and not let that influence? Like, how do you go to Washington and make sure that you're not pushing for laws, regulations, governmental involvement, or something like that, based on what your perception of morality is according to your own religious tradition, versus, you know, governing for the broader public, as you've talked about?
Right. Well, first and foremost, we have to understand that in the Constitution, it is written that there is no religious test for office. So that's black and white. Let's be very clear about that. And how I view the world, what shapes my thought processes, really comes from my religious background. And I think that's good. I think that people can understand that. I think when things are defined like that, it's easier for someone to look at that and go, okay, I understand why this person is thinking this way. You know, if you're a Buddhist or a Muslim or a Taoist, or, you know, if you're a Satanist, when you're speaking from a perspective, everybody knows why I'm thinking stuff. And I've been very clear with you about this, is that it's not my job to impose my religious beliefs on people. It's nobody's job to do that. Just as I don't want people imposing a religious belief on me, it would be wholly inappropriate for me to impose my religious beliefs on them. And that's just what we have to do. People have to understand what informs your thinking. But we also have to understand that, you know, the United States of America, we are not a theocracy. And I don't want to live in a theocracy. But I want every single person listening to this or watching this, I don't know if it's going to be recorded video, I want them to understand what informs my thinking. And they should get that. And I think that's okay. Do you know what I mean? I'm actually this transparent. You know what I mean? And if anybody ever has any questions, I'd like them to just ask me. And the two of my goals are to be the most accessible congressman in the history of our government, and also to provide the best constituent services of any congressman or woman in Congress. Those are two admirable goals. And the way that people understand that they will be treated equally is because they understand my perspective. I view every single person as the apex of God's creation. And that's regardless of how you're living your life, your political affiliation, all these other things that we fight about all the time, but I think is just, it's just crazy. Every single human being I view as the apex of God's creation. Two guys came up to me in River Falls. They're a married couple, these two men. And they say, "Hey, Derek, we want you to know that we're married, we're gay, and we support you." And I looked at them and I said, "Well, that's great, because I view you as the apex of God's creation," because they are. And I treat every single person that I meet that way. And I have for my entire adult life, you know, but that all got lost in the shuffle. Everybody, you know, they try to depict me as this radical right-wing hate everybody guy. And then the press, including you guys, ran with it. You know what I mean? Push this narrative. And now what's great about being elected is that people actually listen and they understand who I am as a real person.
With our closing moments, I want you to reflect a little bit. This is not the first time you've taken an oath on behalf of the country. Your whole career in the military, obviously. How is this different from that, or how do you reflect on the oath that you're about to take on January 3rd? I know this will air after you've done that.
It's an incredibly huge responsibility. There are 750,000 people that are now my people. And I put that on my social. I call the people that are closest to me my people. And that's how I view everybody in this district. And it's a huge responsibility. And it's also a tremendous honor. These problems need to be, or this job needs to be approached soberly, needs to be approached sternly. And I will never forget that the people sent me to Washington, D.C. to try in even the slightest way make their life better for them and their children and their grandchildren. And I will not fail at that.
That's Representative-elect Derek Van Orden. Still, as of today, the House still trying to figure out who is going to be its speaker. And until that happens, none of the new members can be sworn in. Nevertheless, Van Orden is in Washington and is supporting the House speakership candidacy of Kevin McCarthy. As soon as the House gets a speaker, will be sworn in as the representative from the 3rd Congressional District. Coming up in a moment, we'll hear from Representative Jill Billings from La Crosse and then Representative Lauren Oldenburg from Viroqua, both members of the Wisconsin State Assembly. If you'd like to get in touch with our show, it's newsmakers@WPR.org, newsmakers@WPR.org. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Welcome to 2023, and in particular, welcome to the 2023 legislative session. Today on Newsmakers, we're getting a number of legislative updates. Earlier in today's show, you heard from the brand new 3rd District Congressman, Republican Derek Van Orden. Later in today's program, we'll hear from Republican State Assembly person Lauren Oldenburg from Viroqua. And joining me right now is Democratic Representative, Assembly Representative Jill Billings from La Crosse. She represents the 95th Assembly District, which includes, correct me if I'm wrong, Jill, the city of La Crosse, as well as Shelby and Campbell townships, right?
That's right. I have, town of Campbell out in French Island, all of La Crosse, and most of Shelby.
Okay, good deal. Well, as this legislative session gets started, it's not just another legislative year. It's also the beginning of the biannual budgeting process. So it's a particularly active legislative year. What are you particularly looking forward to as you kick off the 2023 session?
Well, it was a really nice inauguration yesterday. It's one of my favorite days in the Capitol when everybody's together, family and friends are here, and everybody is in a good mood to start out the session. It's an exciting time. There's music playing on the floor, and we're sworn in, and then we sign the giant historic book that legislators have signed through history. And it's really an honor. It's a great reminder and an honor to be back on the floor of the assembly to represent the people of our area. I also was in the rotunda, seated in the rotunda, watching the governor sworn in, the lieutenant governor, the constitutional offices, Josh Collar, attorney general, and listening to some really good speeches and hearing some great choirs and bands from around the state play. And it's a really great festive day in the Capitol. But also it's a time to think about, okay, what can we get done and what's going to probably happen first. I sat in the front row in our assembly on the Democratic side because I was elected to leadership this year. So that's something new for me. And I'd like for all of us to be a really disciplined caucus, really thoughtful caucus. And we have to make sure that we have our numbers here because we are close on the edge of the Republicans being able to overturn any vetoes that the governor puts forth. And so we have to be there to uphold the governor's vetoes in the state assembly. So we have to be very disciplined and ready to go no matter what happens coming up, just to make sure that our state keeps moving forward. And so personally, I'd like to readdress some of the issues that I've worked on in the past. I'm the ranking member on children and family. So I have some human trafficking legislation, a package of legislation that I'll be putting out, trying to work with the Attorney General's office on this. And I'm looking at some recommendations from Shared Hope International, which gave Wisconsin a grade of F, along with most states overwhelmingly, on how we deal with human trafficking and victims of human trafficking. So I think there are ways that we can do better there. And I think we should be able to have easy agreement on some of the things that I would like to put forward. And I've already talked to some of my friends on both sides of the aisle about it. I know that Democrats would like to appeal the 1849 abortion ban. I think the anniversary of Roe v. Wade is coming up at the end of this month. And, we have one of the most draconian bills that's on the books that now is the law of the land in Wisconsin. And so I think we have to really look at repealing that and having something in place that gives women autonomy over their bodies and, doesn't have legislators telling them what they can do with their bodies. I heard a lot about that over the summer. And so I'd like to work with my colleagues to do something about that. PFAS is a huge issue in Wisconsin and in my district. And hopefully the Senate will move on some of the governor's appointments and we'll have a DNR board that will address this in a better way. I'm sure there'll be some things in the governor's budget. I would like to address PFAS. Last year we had a 10-point bill with the Clean Water Act. And I would like to look at that legislation again and see what we can do to help people like the people in our district on French Island who are still drinking bottled water.
You talked about the general positive mood in some of the events that you've attended, both related to the inauguration and kicking off the legislative session. And obviously, you're working with a group of people who, on a personal level, care about each other and can get along in those circumstances. And yet, there are really distinct political differences between you. You yourself brought up the importance of in your new role as the vice chair of your caucus, like rallying the troops, so to speak, to make sure that you can uphold gubernatorial vetoes. The assembly speaker was quoted in an article that I read this week saying that one of his goals was to stand up against the governor's, as you know, quote unquote, liberal agenda or what. So there's both camps sort of entrenched in this make sure the other party doesn't wreck something that I care about side of things. How do you get past that sort of attitude toward a more positive approach to legislating?
Well, there are a couple things. First of all, a lot of the legislation that I've chosen to introduce often are pieces of legislation where we can find common ground. Not always. Sometimes you just introduce legislation because people in your district want it. And you think it's the right thing to do. So I've introduced legislation like that. I've also introduced legislation, like, for example, last session, I introduced legislation and it was signed into law that would increase the penalties for manufacturing and distributing fentanyl. We know that fentanyl is part of the majority of overdoses in Wisconsin by far. We know that drug overdoses are rising in number year after year. And so this was something law enforcement brought to me. I worked with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle and the attorney general and got this signed into law. I've talked with one of my friends on the other side of the aisle about a bill that we looked at in the past that would allow fourth graders and their families to have free access to all of our state parks. I think it's a great way to introduce kids and families that might not be able to afford to go to state parks or not normally go to our beautiful state parks and introduce them to that great environment, that healthy environment. And so we're looking at that legislation. And I was excited when he talked to me about that and said, do you want to work together in this? It's an easy, kind of simple bill. Won't be the most important bill in the world, but I think it is an important bill. It's a good bill for kids in our state and families and to introduce them to state parks and get more involvement in our state parks. And it's something that shouldn't be too controversial, I don't think. So we'll be working on that. I think sometimes you find common ground and sometimes you just educate people with human trafficking. Some of that is educating people about what is human trafficking? What's the face of human trafficking? And we have 24 new members this year out of 99. So I think this will be a year of educating, re-educating legislators about issues. And then hopefully with education and conversation, we can bring some more people and find a common ground.
The human trafficking legislation that you're planning to introduce that you've spoken about, what are a couple of things that Wisconsin could do in your mind to move the needle from that F grade that you mentioned earlier in our conversation up in a more positive direction?
Well, some things are pretty simple, like, and some counties are already doing some of this in our state, like making sure that victims have someone that helps them through that court process. They've lived a pretty horrible life in fear for quite a while with a trafficker that may have been trying to brainwash them. So to have someone kind of hold their hand through the court system with bringing charges, with testifying, with trying to keep them safe, because a lot of the traffickers are looking for their people that they're trafficking and trying to bring them back in under their control. So it's kind of a dicey situation. And so I think there's a lot of things that we can do to help victims through that. for getting justice for what's happened to them in the past several years or forever, how long. Safe harbor, something I've introduced in the past that would make it illegal to, or it says you cannot arrest a child for prostitution. And so that's a bill that we need more education on. So we'll be doing that, talking to legislators about what that means. And I think that's a way that hopefully we'll have some common ground on that issue.
The state is looking at potentially a roughly $6.5 billion budget surplus, which is an astounding number for my mind to comprehend. What are you hoping to see accomplished with that budget surplus? Additional spending in key areas, tax cuts, anything in between those?
Yeah, I think that one area where we can certainly find common ground, Republicans and Democrats, is that we're in agreement that some of that money should go back to taxpayers. Right now, we're in a situation where people are paying more for groceries and heating bills. And so it really makes sense at this time to give some of that back to people who could really use some more money in their bank accounts. So I'm in favor of that, as is most everyone in this building. So hopefully we can find common ground there. You know, I see with the budget coming up, there's always issues with juvenile justice. I think those issues will come up. Education, you know, we'll have to work together to find. We saw here in La Crosse School District that teachers got 2% raises this year, and after getting 0% the time before. And, you know, this is becoming a problem where we don't have enough people who want to go into this profession. And it's so important. So hopefully we can give some relief there. I think shared revenue, we'll be looking at shared revenue likely and give some relief to local governments who haven't gotten as much in shared revenue going forward. And so I think those are some of the areas that we can also likely find some kind of common ground or compromise, hopefully.
As I mentioned earlier, this is the beginning of the 2-year budget biennium. The next 2-year budget will hopefully be passed during this legislative session, and so everybody will be laying out their hopes and dreams and all of that. Is there something that you would like to see in the budget that has faced a difficult time getting the proper attention?
One thing that I've advocated for in the past, and hopefully we can get this project across the line, is Prairie Springs 2, the second phase of our science buildings. I'm on the State Building Commission, and so I've talked with the governor about that building. He's been very supportive in the past. I expect he'll be supportive of that in the future. And just now having conversations with legislators again about the importance of that for our many science majors on our campus. So we'll see what happens with that as it hits the Joint Finance Committee. That's when it's been pulled in the past. I think COVID had something to do with that in the past. I know that we've got a really good group of people in the La Crosse area, whether it's people in business who hire our science majors and need those science majors, or faculty on campus, students on campus that can communicate the face of why we need this building. I'm cautiously optimistic about that. Also on Building Commission, I'm also on the Wisconsin Historical Society Board of Curators, and we have a science museum project that I'd like to see go further. And that is the building that's just across the street from the Capitol. When all the fourth graders come for their field trips, they take a trip to the museum to study Wisconsin's history, but unfortunately it doesn't work out that they can all even fit now. So there's a great push to have a new building, and for our wonderful collection, a lot of it's stored offsite, and to bring in more of our collection. For people that come here to visit in Madison, but also bring our collection out into the state for people that might not be in Madison. So it's really exciting. There's been some really good private fundraising going along with the state funding that we're requesting for that project. And so I'm really excited about that project in this next 2 years.
Well, it'll be an interesting 2 years for sure. Representative Jill Billings has been our guest. She is the Democrat representing the 95th Assembly District, which includes the city of La Crosse, a lot of the town of Shelby and the town of Campbell as well. And I appreciate your time very much at the beginning of a busy legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can reach out by emailing newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Our program continues next, a conversation with Republican Lauren Oldenburg, who represents the 96th Assembly District. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. We are enjoying a legislative preview today on the show as both the United States Congress and our Wisconsin State Legislature are getting things underway for the year. Earlier in the program, you've heard from Representative Derek Van Orden, the Republican congressman who represents the 3rd District. And last segment, you heard from Representative Jill Billings, the Democrat in the State Assembly representing the 95th Assembly District, which is primarily the city of La Crosse and the surrounding townships. And now joining us is Representative Lauren Oldenburg. He is a Republican from Viroqua who represents the 96th State Assembly District, which is Vernon County, Monroe County, Crawford County, that area of the state there. Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us again on Newsmakers.
You're welcome. I'm glad you reached out to me and able to touch base with you.
The session is underway now, this is an important session. As we've touched on earlier in this show, our listeners will remember, this is the year when the legislature will pass the budget for the next 2 years. Wisconsin passes its budget 2 years at a time, and this is the year when that has to be done. So a lot of important things being undertaken in this 2023 legislative session. What are you looking forward to out of the session this year?
The biggest thing is, like you said, the budget. That's going to be your first and foremost priority as a state legislator to do. And we're coming in very fiscally in great shape, as far as projected surplus, which is a projection, And I've always said it's a very, when you have excess revenue as a past co-op board member and president of a couple past board co-op boards, when you have excess revenue, you have a lot of ideas how to expend it, And so we're going to have a lot of ideas and a lot of things thrown out there. Support this program. So I truly believe it's going to be, not an easy road to go down to as far as find how to spend the excess money. I'm sure we'll address some kind of a tax cut, tax rebate, however that looks going forward. Definitely, I've talked to in the last couple of weeks, talked to superintendents of my local schools. Being the federal fiscal dollars are going to kind of end here in the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to have to backfill those dollars, and how does that look and how much, how do we, put it in the student dollars or however that is, that's going to have to get washed out here through this budget also. And we still got to address roads, make sure our infrastructure is up to date. Especially out here in the rural areas, because we have a lot of farming, get the feed trucks out there, get the commodities to market and fertilizer out to the farmers. That's always a concern. So we have to have good and strong roads. And then also I'm chairing the environmental committee this year and vice chair still at the ag committee. And then I'm also on energy utilities, three good committees that I truly believe we'll see a lot of interesting and ideas come through our committees as far as bills. And so I'm looking forward to that time also, especially as I represent the Cooley region here. We have a lot of flooding issues in the past, and I'm working on some bills. I'm not going to go into the details of them right now, but some new kind of grant programs to maybe mitigate some of this flooding going forward. So looking forward to that. I've been working with Toronto Limited, Wetland Association, Town Association on this one bill. We've been starting maybe a year and a half ago. So I'm looking forward to that. So hopefully when that comes out, I can maybe jump on the radio here again and go through that bill with you on a little bit more detailed basis.
It sounds sounds very interesting. I want to ask you about this projected roughly $6.5 billion surplus that you referenced earlier. Quite a chunk of money and a lot of discussion about how it needs to be spent. We hear from Democrats and Republicans alike who all favor some kind of tax cut, wherein at least a portion of that money would come back to the taxpayer, since it is a pretty big surplus. But there's disagreement about how that happens, and it wasn't able to get done in the last session. Where do you see common ground, ability to work across the aisle on that issue of a potential tax cut?
Where that number ends up to being is probably the biggest thing, and how much and how, is it at a middle class tax cut, or we try to get to a flat tax so it's all even? And there's a bill presented today that, if your retirements, that you would not have to pay income tax, state of Wisconsin, all those things are on the table, I believe. And they have to be washed out through the committee process and, where those numbers, working with the Fiscal Bureau and Department Rep, where does those numbers come out? And I think, like I said before, we're going to have a lot of ideas how to do it. I definitely will believe it will be some kind of a tax cut, on our level. We did, a couple $1 billion last year in the budget as far as reducing our tax burden, to individuals. And I'm sure it'll be somewhere in that or greater. But how does it look out? I mean, your guess is as good as mine as far as that goes. So, but we shall, both sides should be at the table and see what it is. And we'll get the governor's budget here in February and see where he's at laid out on those things. And we'll work from there.
You talked about school funding and hearing from some of the superintendents in your area. There were just a huge number of dollars associated with ballot measures, schools requiring upgrades of certain types, and instead of getting that funding from the legislature, they've gone and asked the public to vote on whether people would pay actual more taxes in order to support their schools. With such a huge budget surplus, do you think it's possible to take some of those not ongoing like salary and related expenses, those kinds of things, but those like once every couple of decades, like capital needs that school has? Do you think the state can help pay for that?
I believe, I don't know how much stomach it is down there in Madison to do that. I think we're going to address the main issue. What we're seeing today is the inflation. I mean, I met with my local school board where I went to school here in Viroqua. It's almost 8% in salary increase, just to stay in competitiveness with the private out there to bring students in or bring teachers in. So I think, and that was roughly, what they increased last year and this year, anywhere from $600 to $800 per student, so that is quite a dollars. And I don't think, a statewide, we got excess revenue, but boy, if we get anywhere near, the covering that kind of cost, it's going to take a lot of that surplus already. So I don't see that. And I'm a true believer, if we're going to do a big capital expenditures, I think the people of the local school district should have a chance to weigh in on it and stuff. Percentage wise, maybe they can be helped pay for by the state, but the school the ones that live in school district should actually have a chance to weigh in on that.
You talked about what an issue flooding is, and how infrastructure improvements, maintenance over time can have an impact on that. How can the legislature weigh in on that issue and help protect particularly farmers in your area from being devastated by the flooding that has struck your counties recently?
Well, the biggest thing, you know, we did a little bit last, actually went through the environmental committee, is giving rebates for cover crops. So it's $5 if you had a multi-pearl crop insurance and you put cover crops on, you get a $5 rebate. Our local watershed, we got three of them right here in Vernon County, Coon Creek, Bad Axe, and Tanner, producer-led watersheds. And all of them brings the producers, the locals, who owns the land, do some better farming practices. And that would keep the water on the soil and keeps the flooding away from the valleys. And so those practices where we can support in the state legislature through statutes, through dollars that we can give to these farmers and the landowners to change their practices a little bit to help to hold that water on the soil so that before it gets down into the valleys where it's extreme flooding. And then through the bill that I'm trying to work on through do some feasibility studies and grants to implement them to do some of these points that where it gets always get flooded out on the infrastructure, like this bridge gets flooded out every 2 years. What can we do going forward to change that? And the big cost when you do that, you have to do a hydrological study, and how does it affect the flooding area. So that's big cost of it. So we can hopefully help that going forward.
You talked about the governor's budget recommendation coming in February, the legislature will obviously weigh in on that. What are you hoping to see in the next biannual budget?
Well, number one, kind of mentioned, we have to address a little bit on, especially the school end of it and stuff, but hopefully, don't forget us ag people out here. We got a $104 billion industry in the state of Wisconsin. So we're still going to have to address the road issues. We're still behind getting these state roads and town roads. I would like to see more road aid to the local townships because they're costing inflation, putting men in those trucks, maintaining the roads, repaving or whatever, because the oil prices are so much higher. Diesel price is so much higher. It shouldn't be. It's not no fault of their decisions going forward that they should have to take this excess operational costs up. So I would definitely like to see more road aid going to the local townships. Kind of what I want to see in the butt that way, especially what helped rural Wisconsin. I know there's shared. That's part of the shared revenue end of it with these local municipalities. We definitely have to do. Look into that, see some of that, and I'd like to see where he's at on that.
You just brought up the sort of dichotomy between rurally located ag affiliated people throughout Wisconsin. What a huge industry that is, and yet a lot of our attention, and I'll own part of this, attention in the news media and elsewhere focuses on higher population areas, cities, so on across the state. What do you think people need to be aware of about what's going on the agricultural side of Wisconsin and the value that creates throughout the state?
Well, we still got to have a viable ag industry, dairy, whatever it looks like, small or large, small produce producers all the way along the line have to be able to market their product and raise their product, and that's a huge part of it. And we got to support them through the UW extension, through the state statutes, whatever we can do to support those so they can actually thrive in the state of Wisconsin. And also we kind of keep an eye on who owns the land in the future. We always get these outside investors, large investors, and they don't have roots in Wisconsin. So we always have to keep an eye on those kind of things that happen around there. And go back to the infrastructure. We got to keep that up to date as far as that goes. And then with go back to the shared revenue, these local townships are, a lot of farmers are on their board. They've got a lot of farming communities. So they got to have the dollars to run their communities or run their township. So we have to, that's what we need to know. And buy local. And we got to still continue to, through DAC cap or however to support local producers and how to market them.
Lauren Oldenburg is the state assembly person in the 96th Assembly District. He's a Republican from Viroqua. The 96th encompasses lots of Vernon, Monroe, Crawford counties. And I appreciate your time today, Lauren. Thank you very much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you missed part of today's show, you can stream all of our programs online at WPR.org/newsmakers. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Production help from Kate Spranger. Thanks a lot, Kate. I'm Ezra Wall. I hope you'll join us again next time. First, let me tell you a couple of opportunities to hear Newsmakers each week. We're on at 10 a.m. on Fridays on the Ideas Network 90.3. Then we repeat on Friday night at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.